1340 WJRI.
Welcome back. It is 10 minutes after 8 o'clock on this Tuesday morning and 72 degrees, plenty of sunshine. We're going to have plenty of that. We're going to have plenty of temperature in the upper digits. So, yeah, be prepared for it. Now, we're going to switch gears. Conversation we haven't actually talked about in a while, especially not at length, but we're going to. It's about sustainability, and it is something that you'll see in major news cycles around the world. Sustainability. How do we sustain our life here on Earth? And it starts with small steps. Joining us this morning is Jed Moody, Special Assistant to the Chancellor for Sustainability, Appalachian State University, and also Ben Willis. Ben, at Caldwell Community College and Technical Institute, you have been involved in this program's developed educating students at CCC and TI, preparing them as well for not the educational aspect, but with the college taking on sustainability as well and looking at it in our local area as an elected official. Thank you both for being here.
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you, Rocky.
Thank you, Rocky.
Kind of nice that both of you know each other. And so sustainability just is an umbrella for so much underneath it. Jed, where do you begin with it? What is a point that the average listener, when should we or to what should we be paying attention?
Well, sustainability is one of these terms that gets used so much that the common person has a hard time even describing it. And for me, I spend every day in it, and it can mean so many things. But sustainability is when you look at a culture or you look at a system and you look at it over a period of 10, 20 years, and how can we sustain our life as we know it? And sustainability involves not only are we being environmentally sustainable, do we have clean air, do we have clean water, and things like that, but also do we have a sustainable financial system? Are we able to pay for the things that we want over time? Are we going in debt? And so are the finances of how we're working things sustainable over time? And then the third leg of sustainability is kind of socially sustainable. Are all segments of our society being treated fairly? Do we have good public health? You know, are people happy and are people being treated fairly across socioeconomic boundaries? And so for any system to said to be sustainable over time, Rocky, it has to be socially sustainable, economically sustainable, and environmentally sustainable.
Okay, it opens up a can of worms. Already has been, I think, over the weekend, read an editorial, and I forget the name, and it absolutely embarrasses me not to, but, Pope. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Talking about sustainability, what developed nations are doing to our world, of which we are a part of those developed nations, and really for Africa, what we're doing to countries in Africa. But I've got to ask you, Jed, how long has sustainability been in our everyday lexicon now? How long ago did we start paying attention to this?
Well, the term sustainability got its start in the 70s with some conferences that the United Nations put together. But it's really become more of our lexicon, I would say, in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Ben, for you, you were a science teacher, mm-hmm. and going that route in Caldwell educational system, public school system. For you, when did it first appear for you and become of interest?
Well, I can remember being a kid in the elementary schools and, you know, throw your white paper in the trash can and turn there's signs on the around the light fixtures, you know, going out of the classroom, turn off the lights that we made as kids. And it's still like that in the classroom today. So I think where the problem comes in with sustainability, and what Jed was talking about, the triple bottom line, which is, you know, people, planet, profit, is this is stuff, this is, it's life. I mean, this is things that we do all the time. I think where it gets, it always takes a sidetrack is when it gets politicized, right? And it becomes a talking point there. But really, it's just about taking care of the place that we live, your home and the people around you. So it really, it becomes, that, you know, but as a kid, I mean, it's everywhere around us. I think everybody's all about saving money and taking care of the place, you know, for their kids and their family and future generations. It's just thinking on those types of terms, I think, is what sustainability really is all about. When it gets lost and you know, when a pope talks about it, which was a big, bold statement for him to do that. I mean, that really kind of got that debate going and talking back and forth. And I know there was a big article from, was it Stanford or Harvard came up with a big article this week that talked about, you know, we're on a path to extinction. Oh my gosh.
Stanford.
Yeah. If you want, people will say those Stanford, Harvard, oh, they're liberals. Come on. It's just them crying foul. Jed, how do you rebut that? And let's talk about the people aspect of it. But what are we up against when it comes to getting the message out?
Yeah. Well, I'll kind of second what Ben said, and I do a fair amount of public speaking, and one of the things that I say is do not let this notion of sustainability become politicized. Mm-hmm. You know, clean air, clean water is something that everybody likes. You don't have to be on the left or the right to like clean air. And when something like that gets politicized, it'll frustrate you, particularly in my job. But if you look at a society where, you know, in North Carolina, we have parts of North Carolina where some of our children face hunger at the highest rate in the entire United States. You roll these issues forward, they can have tremendous economic impacts on our future economic system. And it's not conservatives or liberal that want children to be fed. And so we really need to look at all of these issues if we want to have a vibrant society right here in, you know, Lenore, in Boone, in Raleigh, in North Carolina. If we want to have a vibrant future, we need to be looking at which parts of our society need to be strengthened, what parts of our environment need to be nurtured, and what do we need to do financially to make sure that we're going to continue to be able to support these things. And to me, these are not conservative or political issues. These are our unified future.
Okay. And about the future. Mm-hmm. Where are we at present? How critical is the need to address this and finally get a grasp on it?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at what we're doing at the community college, it's almost not a choice, right? So if you look at, we're more of just-in-time training, right? So, Rocky, you're familiar with what we do. We're two-year degrees, or in my department, in corporate continuing education, we do a lot of construction trades, a lot of HVAC, a lot of those types of things. And what we've done and how I got to know Jed is back when I first got hired at the college is we had to go through kind of a resurgence of these types of programs, because now it becomes building science. So even your construction trades classes are having to learn how to build energy efficient homes. Your HVAC systems are going to be a lot more robust and a lot more efficient. So you can't do the things that you used to do the same way that you did in the past. So the building code won't allow it. You can't get a certificate of occupancy in your home now unless you know how to do these energy efficient means. So there are things that are being taken place at all levels that are slowly trying to integrate what we're talking about now that is going to affect us down the road. I mean, you see it. You go to Lowe's and you look Energy Star this, Energy Star that, and all that other thing. And you know, I don't know about you, Rocky, because I know you've got a ton of money. But I like to save money. And so when I go to, and I'm looking, and if I know that I can install an HVAC system in my house that's going to save me $40 or $50, you know, it's like Jess said, if it's not left or right, it's about, you know, oh, this is not only going to save energy, it's also going to save me money. So, you know, you start thinking about it in all these different ways. You see that it's a part of your life and it's a part of your daily. It's just the way it is.
But Jed, it's expensive to save money. How do you combat it? It's costly to be energy efficient. And I'm asking you a little bit closer to the mic there.
Yeah.
So what do you tell them? What do you, at Appalachian, I've got so many questions I want to ask. I just want to jump into it wholeheartedly.
Bring it.
But how do we make it affordable? Or how do we get the message across that you are actually saving money in this instance when you do spend money?
Yeah. Well, in some cases it's expensive, but in a lot of cases I think that argument is a little overstated. If you're trying to build a building and you want to build it to what's called LEED standards, LEED, if you want to Google that at home. But if you're trying to build a building to those standards, there's a belief among some that you're going to spend you know, 50% more on your building. And the reality is, if you have a good architect that understands these standards and you have a experienced construction technician that knows how to implement these, it might cost you 5% more to build a building like this. And the savings that you're going to see, as Ben already pointed out, are going to pay for themselves. You know, another example that maybe the listener might relate to better is an LED light bulb. You see a light bulb that costs $8 and you're scratching your head like, you know, why should I do that? You know, replace your light bulbs are the ones that are on all the time. And if you replace a light bulb like that, it's going to pay for itself. Like in our parking garage at ASU, when we put in LED light bulbs, they pay for themselves in less than 1 year. So these things that seem really expensive, you have to take a longer view, and that's what sustainability is. You don't measure sustainability in a quarter or in 1 year even. You measure these things over years, and so you look at your own financial future and say, when I buy that light bulb, it's going to last me 20 years, and after about 2 years, it's going to have paid for itself.
And it burns cooler, brighter and cooler, go figure.
Yeah. Right. Well, anytime something burns hot, that's its way of telling you it's wasting energy. So when your car engine is hot, that's saying, hey, I'm inefficient. If your car engine was 100% efficient, you could lay your hand on it and it wouldn't be hot.
Now you're relating things which everybody can relate to, your right. home, your automobile.
Yeah, you're right, Rocky. And I think, you know, another reason why this type of sustainability doesn't gain as much traction is our culture. I mean, in the United States, man, it's instant gratification. I want this bulb. I want it to save. It's $8. I want it to save me $10 now, yep. Right? So you can't see that that bulb's going to last you years. And I mean, you can't even buy incandescent bulbs anymore. So I mean, they don't even exist. But you know, I think that's another reason, almost a speed bump with the way we think as Americans or, you know, people in the United States, is we want it now, and we want to see return on investment now.
Okay, getting rid of the incandescent bulb. Is this the first step, a small step, where government has stepped in and saying, we're not going to make these available anymore. You're going to have to buy these energy-efficient light bulbs. Is that how we have already introduced sustainability? Is this what we need, baby steps, as it is to get society to buy into it?
Yeah. Well, Ben, you may know better, but I was in the home improvement store this weekend, and I did still see incandescent light bulbs. Now, I think in California they may have outlawed them, and that's where sustainability gets to be really sticky, when stuff gets mandated.
Right.
You know, and nobody wants to be told what kind of light bulb you have to buy.
Right.
But I do know that in North Carolina you can still buy them, and you have to kind of look for them. But yeah, you know, hopefully you won't look too hard. Honestly, you're going to save money to get the LED bulbs. Look for them to be on sale, but they will save you money.
Well, and on that too, I mean, you go to your utility. I mean, your Duke Energy or Blue Ridge Electric, you know, who are the two providers. And I don't know about Granite Falls. I know they're on Electricity there. But the Duke Energy has some amazing bulb buying programs, energy efficiency kits. And same with Blue Ridge Electric is always running some type of thing to help you. And it's a fraction of the cost. I mean, we got our house when we first moved to houses, they have energy efficiency kits. And I mean, you get them for nothing. And it would be a box of LED bulbs and hot water heater wrapper and all these types of the low hanging fruit when it comes to saving a little bit of money here or there. You can throw in one of those light bulbs, and it has the same amount of energy as like 10 other of the incandescents. So you're like, if you had 10 rooms in your house turned on, you know, it's like the same as having one of those, you know, so just do the basic math, you can see it.
Well, I think of how much air conditioning people may be able to save money on air conditioning with all the heat of lamps and lights that are incandescent. You're warming up the room. You're trying to cool it down. It's a bit of a win-lose effect as you're going on now, so it only makes perfect sense. You don't like the idea of government, Jed, mandating. I understand that, but if they just kind of take away incandescent bulbs altogether, is that mandating, or you're given only one choice?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think over time, the role of regulation is going to really depend on how quickly as a society we adopt certain things. You know, if we all get more efficient with our use of energy our cars become more efficient. If things turn based on what we do as individuals and it starts to be satisfactory, but if the environment degrades to a certain point, then that's the role of government. And so, you know, what I try to do in my job, and Ben does too, I mean, every day I go to work saying, how can I help, you know, people make better choices? And that the reason I've chosen to work in higher education is the students, you know, at Appalachian and where Ben works here in Lenore, these are our future. And so I'm not saying I've given up on my generation, but I am focused on these 22-year-olds and 18-year-olds who are going to change the world. And we're teaching them the best methods we can in every single thing we do.
And a lot of people say that this generation, the Gen Xers or whatever follows that, are more social conscious. And I hate to lump it in sustainability, but it's more social because you're thinking of yourself and you're thinking of society in general. I'm asking you guys, just on a local level, do you see that with young folks who are coming into your colleges?
Absolutely, you see it, and it's what you grew up with. I mean, when I was a kid, you went to buy a car, you bought the biggest car you could afford, and there was no notion of why you would save energy or not. So, you know, students in college now never knew a time when you couldn't buy a hybrid car. They never knew a time when you couldn't buy an energy-efficient light bulb. So when you grow up being taught from the time you're 2 feet tall that we want to save energy, that we want to be socially conscious. And so as it becomes more of the lexicon, as you said, it's just the environment. Just like kids today, they get computers more than we get them. It's what they grew up with. So because of this awareness that they have at such a young age, expect for this to accelerate. It's going to be driven by the younger generation, and they're going to lead us. And it's, you know, people of my generation, it's our responsibility to help make sure they've got the resources and the support. But it's also an opportunity for us. You know, I'm in that middle age group. It's our opportunity to follow as they lead.
Ben?
Yeah, no, I agree. Jed said it right. I mean, that's exactly the way I would say it. It is. I think it is. I think of my kids and how they're being, you know, raised and what I'm doing and you know, turn off the lights, shut off the water, you know, all these types of things that are just little things. And they do care about it. I mean, they pay attention. You read the news, read the newspaper, watch the news and you see, that this is you look at hunger and you look at climate change and you look at all these different things that are happening. I think those things happen all the time. But they pay attention, and the world is flat now, and everybody, the world is one, and we can't say, well, we live here and they live over there. That's not us. I think people are starting to think a little bit more holistically and see the earth and society as a system, and I think they're very much aware of that because they're connected. You know, not only, you know, not knowing about hybrid cars, but always being connected to information and being connected to the internet and having access to and answers at the, you know, within seconds, I think changes the way we see the world, period, whether it's in sustainability or anything else.
We're talking sustainability. The time is now 8:27. Ben Willis, Caldwell Community College Technical Institute, also Jed Moody, Special Assistant to the Chancellor for Sustainability, Appalachian State University. You have institutions which both have access to Raleigh. So I want to talk from your perspectives. What message are you getting from Raleigh? Are our legislators, the governor, I know they're aware of this, what kind of ear are you getting from them? Jed, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Well, we have seen a legislature that's really focused on dollars and budgets and issues. It's kind of the issue of the time. And so our focus to try and get sustainability adoption has been to highlight the economic savings. And we can talk later about something called the Appalachian Energy Summit, but we've brought together all of the universities in the UNC system to save energy, to save money, to be working on sustainability. And when we started this initiative, we did the math, and we knew we could save the state $1 billion. And so instead of saying, we're going to save the planet, we're going to all of these things, we went to them and said, look, we're going to save you $1 billion. And in reality, we're going to double that savings. And so our path towards sustainability is to in this era, to be focused on the financial savings and allow people to say, oh, you mean I get to save money and do the right thing? And so it's been helpful.
Ben, CCC and TI.
Yeah, I remember when former Speaker of the House Tom Tillis came to Lenore a year or so ago, 2 years ago, and he was asking questions. He was doing his political thing, right now our senator, and he, I asked him, where did he want to see North Carolina be in the next? And he is, I want to see North Carolina be the leader in, be the biggest power producer. We are one of the largest, you know, we are the home of Duke Energy. We're now Progress Energy. And if you look, we have one of the largest solar farms in the country here. And so there's a lot of, energy is one of the big industries in North Carolina, right? So, I think what you're seeing in Raleigh is, I don't know. I think it's all about the money, right? These guys are all about what looking back. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you also got to weigh the good, the bad with what's going on in the industries and the businesses that partake in that, in those fields. We're there for a reason. I think, it is all about the money. Just like before, it's just like the money, you know, at the house, and they're looking at your home, personal lives. It's also about the money for them as well. And I think that conversation is still being hashed out. You can see with the debate going on in the Senate budget and all that stuff right now. So I think you'll see some back and forth still with that. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
$1 billion, that's going to speak to any state legislature, even California. They would take anything they can get. And you said that in reality, you know you can save $1 billion, Jeb, but you think it's going to be more, could be even $2 billion.
Yes. Well, last year, or I should say year 13-14, academic year, the UNC System Colleges avoided $103 million in utility expenses. We anticipate that by the year 2025, the collective efforts of the UNC system to save energy will save the citizens of North Carolina $2 billion.
Wow. And if the public got on board with that, can you imagine? And North Carolina could be, as you talked about, as Tom Tillis talked about as well, it could be the leader in this regard. Let's talk about the planet. Okay, we talk about people, a little bit about profit. We're going to get back to profit because profit's big. We'll wrap up with profit. Let's talk about the planet. We're hearing global warming, and now even some folks, some conservatives who never would have acknowledged it, are starting to give it credence.
Well, you know, it can be a hot topic, but to me, you know, I'm more of a scientist than anything. And so when I look at the science, to me, it is obvious that we are seeing climate change. It's my strong belief that it is caused by man's behavior and the effects on the planet. And you take all that aside, this is one you wouldn't want to be wrong on. The stakes are really high, but you know, one of the problems with climate change is very few people have had a day ruined by global warming. You know, it's if the planet gets 1 degree hotter, does that make your day any worse than yesterday? And you know, it happens so slowly, and the effects are often seen in the Arctic or the Antarctic. And so the effects, we don't see them, but you know, and by the time you do see them and feel them, it's likely going to be too late to avoid some really dramatic changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You can't, I don't buy the argument that, you know, people say, well, that's nature, right? Well, when we do that, when you say, you bring out that's nature doing its thing. Well, you know what? We're nature too. You know, we're not, we always tend to separate ourselves as being, as nature, but we are just as much into this thing as, you know, everything else. So, and also, you know, if you dump things in the creek and you put smoke into the air, I can't breathe as good when I do, when I go and smoke and inhale smoke in the air. I can't drink the water and when I see fish and things dying, that ecosystem is completely changed. Take the scientific effect. This thing dies, then this thing, and then it affects. There's change happening. So that, you know, we as nature beings are dumping the whatever in the waters and doing whatever. Just look at this area. I mean, one of the biggest problems the city has here is brownfields. So brownfields are contaminated grounds from the factories here. And back then, not 40 years ago, you could dispose of this, of some of the chemicals that we use in furniture manufacturing. You just dump it in the ground, or you know, just throw it in a barrel and throw it in the landfill. And you wouldn't dare do that today. So I think there's things that are happening now, you know what I mean, for the better. And again, you get down in this political road and it's like, oh, then it gets all, the conversation gets skewed, right? It goes off left field or right field. And,
and then I want votes. And that's where you lose it. Just, you know, keep it down. Just, it's common sense. This grass and this creek is dead. I can't drink the water. So why, that's bad, right?
does it boil down to the fact of, look, my children, there may be an impact on my children's life and certainly on my grandchildren's life if this continues. Do we have to take it down to that level, to the very personal level? It's kind of hard for folks who've never been to Africa. Well, it's always hot in Africa. I've watched Tarzan movies. And think about some of the rainforests which are being depleted. And again, by man. Maybe, but then an impact within nature itself. What is our responsibility to developing countries in the world?
You know, one of the things about sustainability is the people who feel it most are often the ones that are the most economically disadvantaged. So the wealthier you might be, then you're not likely to have a landfill next to your house or some type of a plant or. And so what happens is the wealthy nations of the world are going to places like the Amazon and cutting down trees. And so it's really being displaced. And so it is all of our responsibility, particularly as a wealthy nation, to be looking at other resources in other countries and other parts of the world. And, you know, companies, corporations have such an impact on our world's economy these days. And so another opportunity each and every one of us has is to be aware of those companies that are doing good in the world and those companies that are being harmful on resources. And you vote with your dollars. When you go to the store, you have a choice to make. And if you buy the goods of the companies that are doing good things, then the market will listen and the companies that do better will prosper. And if it's more expensive, the more that we collectively start to buy the good thing, the less expensive it will become. You know, as we mass produce LED light bulbs, they get cheaper and cheaper. And so, you know, the more we learn how to build green buildings, the cheaper and cheaper they will become. And so, you know, us adopting these technologies, us being aware of the companies that are doing good things, us being collectively aware of resources, it's like a snowball rolling down a hill. And so the more we get together, the cheaper it's going to be, the easier it's going to be to have access to these things. And again, oftentimes these ill effects of sustainability you don't see. In West Virginia, if you ride through there, you're not going to see mountaintop removal. They make it really hard to see. So, you know, these things are never put in plain sight.
And to piggyback off of what Jeff's saying, I think, you know, sustainability is profitable. So you look, again, I'll throw it back to furniture. Bernhardt Furniture is very sustainable. They do a lot of reusing. They use a lot of sustainable goods, because that's what helps sell their product. Everybody wants to, like Jed just said, you want to be associated with that. So not only does it give you you feel good about purchasing that. Bernhardt sells a lot to large banks, and so all those office chairs, if they're made from green materials or this and that, and they're doing more, so yeah, it makes it another selling point. Well, and so they can check it off their boxes, buying sustainable goods, they, you know, locally resourced products, or if it's food or whatever. So Google, just right, who's a heavy energy user, tries to offset these things by doing the right thing in the community by they've got what do you call the co-op foods, bringing in food to their employees down here. This is all those types of things where they're like, oh man, we know we produce X amount of waste or whatever. How can we offset that by doing, you know, solar or by recycling more or using reuse products? And it makes them as a company look good, right? And so everybody kind of wins when you kind of take on this mantra.
Can you easily find companies that are leading the way for sustainability on the internet?
Absolutely, you can. I did some research. I went to the top 50 companies in the world, and I was curious how many clicks on the internet it would take to find their sustainability content. And on average, Rocky, it was less than one click. And so the point is, all of these companies are leading with sustainability. And it is becoming, you talked about the younger generation. I mean, before they go out and they buy a couch or before they buy a car or a light bulb, they're doing that research. And so, and companies are, this is a winning strategy. I'm teaching a workshop tonight about sustainability in business. And I used to think that companies that were sustainable had a competitive advantage. Then a few years after that, I thought, no, those companies, you know, are going to be stronger competitors. Now I believe that companies that don't embrace this movement will cease to exist 5-10 years from now. I think it's going to cost you money to not be sustainable. It's going to cost you customers, and you're likely to become irrelevant in to this new generation of buyers. It's a tremendous opportunity, and it's not something that's happening over there. You know, it's not happening in the big cities. It's happening right here. Mm-hmm. It's happening in Lenore. It's happening in Boone. It's happening across our state. It is the business opportunity of the lifetime, of our lifetime, in my opinion.
Okay, and that's what I'm hearing. It is also a business opportunity, yeah, opportunity to sustain employment, which we know in this country we need it. I know, Ben, you talked very early on when you first took the job at CCC and TI about creating jobs that help people go out with sustainability, building the homes properly, automobiles, and work, being able to work on those. This is a, it's a whole factor of society, of employment in our society, and it's going to become major if it isn't already.
Yeah, that's right, and it is. And every single thing that anybody does, and any company here in Lenore, I mean, we just had an excellent tour of several companies here, leading companies. You know, Bemis is just down the road here. They do a lot of plastic molds, and there's not all the waste goes into another bin that goes and then gets returned to make another product. Bernhardt is going to recycle all their fabrics and make it into something else. We went to NEPCO, which does a lot of, they use a lot of cable or a lot of corrugated cardboard rolls that they have to use and bundle all their product on. They figured out a way to save, you know, tons and tons and tons of stuff going to the landfill, and somebody to come on and reuse it, and it saves them money. It makes them feel good. It gives somebody else a chance to make a little bit of money off the extra cardboard. It is everywhere. It is anything you do is going to be, that business is going to be looking the way to save dollars and cents. And it's going to trans. I don't care if you're at an entry level job or if you're in an advanced level job. It's going to be woven into the way you do your job.
All right, and Jed's got something. We'll talk about it in just a moment, and that's a conference which is coming up. Yep. You have a very special guest as well. We do not want to miss that opportunity. What other countries throughout the world are buying into this? Is the United States a leader, or is the United States a follower of other countries when it comes to sustainability? And just your opinions, what you've searched.
It really varies across the planet. Some European countries like Germany, absolutely leading the way. They have some very innovative policies around waste, around packaging. Like, there have been laws in Germany that if I sold a box of cereal, I'm the company that's responsible for that box after you're done with it. Mm-hmm. So, Germany has the solar resources of Alaska. But yet they are leading, you know, up until just a couple of years ago, they were leading the world in solar adoption. And so, you know, in Europe, you know, you look back at their history, they cut down all their trees at some point to make heat. And so they've lived through these resource ups and downs, where in America we haven't lived through that. So Europe is definitely ahead of us. And then you have United States, which is really catching up quickly, and it's becoming, you know, schools are, you know, whether it be community college, higher ed, but then you have developing nations like China and India that are really kind of behind the curve, but yet getting the message quickly. I mean, you know, in China, they're seeing tremendous pollution through just their rapid growth, and there's nothing like, you know, fog or smog as thick as pea soup to make you get the message.
Mm-hmm. And see their citizens out wearing masks in the morning just to have breathability, so they can.
Yeah, I agree with Jed. I mean, you know, you go, I was just recently overseas, and it does, they are, in Europe, they are a little bit, they are on top of it a little bit more, but they are an older nation. And I think that you always have those comparisons of, why aren't you more like Germany? Why aren't you more like France? Why aren't you more like this? And it's not apples to apples. It never is going to be. Our country is so huge, and we're so diverse, and our terrain and what we have, and it's I don't think you can say, well, be more like Germany and that's going to solve all your problems. Well, maybe it in one or two states. So, but it's hard to implement those types of policies here as nationwide. But yeah, they are much farther along for everything that Jed said. Yeah, that it's, I think there's things to learn, from all these parties involved.
Okay. Jed, we'll talk about the conference coming up. As I say, you have a very special guest, and it's not too, in the not too distant future here. And, let's talk about it, and we'll find out who is able to come as well and learn from that. So, if you will.
Okay. Well, the conference is called the Appalachian Energy Summit, and this is Appalachian State taking a leadership position across the state to invite people from the whole UNC system and six private schools from across the state. And also this year we've invited many of the community college. We've invited guests from Caldwell to be with us as well. And the whole idea is, how can we save money, share best practices, work together as a team? And the conference on Monday night, July 13th, part of it is open to the public. And we invite everyone in the region to be our guest at 7:30 on July 13th in the evening, to come hear Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., who is a world-renowned energy policy expert. And if you've never seen him speak, he is just incredibly dynamic. And also on the bill with him that night, you'll get to hear from Rocky Mount Institute's chief scientist, Amory Lovins, who is technically probably the world's foremost expert on energy technology. And so guests that come out will first hear a very stirring speech by Mr. Kennedy, where he's going to talk about issues and ways forward and policy issues. And then when he's done, Amory Lovins is going to come out, and they're going to go head to head, you know, whereas Kennedy's going to come from a policy standpoint, and Amory's going to be like, well, here's technically what really works and doesn't work. And it's just going to be a fascinating debate to have two people of this caliber on stage. I mean, usually each of these guys has their own conference and nobody's, you know, on stage with them. We're going to have these two guys together, and it would certainly be our honor, and we think it would be a great use of anybody's time on, again, July 13th to come to the Schaefer Center for the Performing Arts and be our guest. It's free. And come see Mr. Kennedy, come see Amory Lovins, but also witness, you know, the hundreds of energy experts from across the state who are coming together and building this collaborative network to together save us all that money and help chart the future for our children.
I love it. I love that aspect. I also like the fact that you're not just having Robert F. Kennedy Jr. coming and putting his point of view out there, because a lot of people would say, oh, Democrat, liberal, you know, that's why you're going to mess it. I'm not going to waste my time. It is going to be a debate. All right, I may have to take an early afternoon nap. I love the idea of it. I'd love to be able to hear this. It's 8:47. Ben, I'll give you any last thing. I know you've got a very important meeting to go to. I'm holding you from that. Anything you'd like to say? Because I know you're going to scoot out of here.
No, these Appalachian Energy Summit, Jen and I worked several years ago on putting together. These types of events really are good. They're very educational, whether you're on one side or the other. It's good just to get information. This will be a fantastic event. The more you know, the more you know, right? So, I think when it comes to this, we're going to continually hear this. This is not going away. This debate and these conversations. This is going to be a fantastic event. These guys do a great job with this type of thing. So, I would encourage anybody to attend if they can.
All right. If you got to scoot, I understand. I'll talk with Jed for the last few minutes.
Great.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
As Ben leaves, I just want to tell the listeners in the foothills that you guys have a great resource, and you're lucky to have Ben here in your community.
I concur.
Thanks, Jed. I only paid him $5 to say that.
As always, I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Very, very much. Ben Willis joining us here this morning. So we've got institutions working together with corporations now and trying to approach this sustainability. Does it just boil down to the elementary level, and I mean the elementary schools? Jed, do we have to teach the young, and are the young, if so, are the young teaching the older ones?
I know that I learned from that generation. You know, I get so much energy going to work on a college campus, and everything I learn from these students is amazing. You know, I hope I won't bore you too much, but just I'm going to fly through a list of things that we look at Appalachian State.
Okay.
And we are seen as a national leader in sustainability. And it's because people in this region want to be sustainable. We're drawn to this beautiful part. But we look at every class we teach. We look at how we engage our students. We look at how we engage the public. We look at our air and climate. We look at buildings, dining services, energy, the grounds, our purchasing policies, transportation policies, how we deal with waste, water, how we do strategic planning, how we do governance, diversity, affordability, health, well-being, workplace safety, how we invest our money. We honestly look at every single thing we do. And the reason that we do that, Rocky, is in higher education, we're teaching teachers. We're teaching young people. And so when we put the microscope on ourselves and we look at every last thing we do, then we are educating the future. You know, Appalachian State, we're a community of 25,000 people when you count the teachers. We do 17,000 food transactions. We own the water plant. We have our own electric utility. We, you know, 5,000 kids live on our campus. So it is a city. And we're this grand experiment in how do you do things, you know, in a very sustainable manner. And you said it well. We're educating the future. And absolutely, you know, parents out there, you're probably hearing from your, you know, your second grader as they come home what they're learning about sustainability every day.
I love it. I love just hearing that that is important. And I think about teachers who go out and teach in classrooms. We had a young man graduate from Appalachian just this past spring. He's going to be teaching math and hopefully here in Caldwell County. And I'm sure in his education seminars, there's going to be something he can apply in his classroom. It you take it to each level you can at the basic level in life.
Indeed.
I want to talk to you when it, again, it all boils down to money. You've got the people, the planet, the profit. Really, they go hand in hand. And I'm sorry that it's this way in our country, I'm sure others. But it politics and profit. Politics and profit. How do we get the message? How do we actually get the political realm of our country to buy into this, to come together with their differences and realize this is what we have to do?
Well, I think that's happening now. And again, this is not, we're not spectators. One of my favorite quotes is, you know, there are no passengers on planet Earth. We're all crew members. And so, you know, when you're around the dinner table and somebody's talking about saving energy as being politically this way or that, or clean water is what this group of people wants and not that people, you know, I encourage each and every one of us to stop that conversation in its tracks and say, well, you know, can we not talk about politics? I mean, if we're talking about clean air, let's talk about what it requires. And we're reaching this era where, honestly, it is good for business. Businesses, large and small, are embracing this. Voters from every corner of our state want this. And so I think we're reaching that tipping point. And, you know, I just think that these trends, Rocky, are going to accelerate. We are seeing a rapid acceleration. And everyone out there, this is your chance to not get run over by the train. It's coming fast, and it's not left or right. It's in your best interest. It's in mine. It's in your children's. It's in your economic interest. It's in your health interest. And you're doing your part to ensure that, you know, children 50, 100 years from now are going to have the same beautiful life that you have.
Wonderful. I love it. Jed Moody, our guest, once again, special assistant to the Chancellor for Sustainability. We're talking about sustainability this morning. He's with Appalachian State University. I'll leave the last words with you. Anything that you want to touch on, perhaps we haven't addressed this morning?
Well, again, I really want to encourage everyone that we invite you to be our guest. We've gone to I don't want to say a lot of trouble, but we are making this event on the 13th free and open to the public. We think it's an important message, and we want you to come hear a debate. We want you to come hear about energy policy. We want you to come hear about the technologies that are available. And then, you know, the last thing I would say is that we live in a hotbed for this. We live in one of the most beautiful areas that there is, and so You know, we're speaking to an audience that I think gets it more than some audiences do. And, you know, just be a part. Be a part and know that you have a great resource here in Caldwell. Know that at Appalachian State University, we invite teachers, we invite companies. Look us up. Come see us. Come visit us. We have people in every discipline that would love to engage you. And so this is not the ivory tower on the hill. Again, you can find me on the internet, Jed Moody at Appalachian. Know that we are a resource for this entire region, as is Caldwell. And we care a lot about the future, and we care a lot about you. So come on board and work with us.
Jed Moody, our guest this morning, I thank you so much for your time. It has been invaluable, and the door is open for another conversation anytime you're available.
Fantastic. Thanks.
We'll take a break. We've got to look at your weather forecast. Imagine that. You're listening to Caldwell this morning. The time is 8:55.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Your forecast is powered by Blue Ridge Electric Membership Corporation, where membership matters.
We'll see a mix of sunshine and some partly cloudy periods around the area today. We do have a slight chance of a late afternoon thundershower. It's going to be very hot again as well, with highs about 95 to 100. Overnight tonight, an evening storm in a few spots, otherwise partly cloudy and muggy. Lows will range in the low to mid-70s. On Wednesday, we'll see partly sunny skies, a bit less hot. We may see a few